The Evolve Network is now live at evolvenetwork.tv. Subscribe for meal plans, recipes, cooking shows, and our very own The Magic Pill and The Magic Plant, as well as access to my favourite documentaries. The Evolve Network is also home to our full library of podcasts, with new release podcasts airing first and in full on the channel. You can also watch selected vodcasts in a video format. Meanwhile, enjoy this highlight of our podcast and head over to evolvenetwork.tv for the full Evolve podcast experience. The Evolve with Pete Evans podcast is a conversation about my favourite ingredients for a healthy human experience. We take an informed look at topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanded consciousness. I love exploring the topics that are not traditionally taught at school and take a deep dive into them with my special guests. I invite you to sit back and come along for the ride with an open mind and heart, and please share with your family and friends, as these podcasts may just be the seed from which many things will flourish from. Cheers. We've been using Waters Co. water filters for the last 10 years, and I wholeheartedly trust my family's health with them. Waters Co., established 1977, have personal and domestic water filters, which turns your ordinary tap water into great-tasting, alkaline, ionized mineral water, which removes up to 99.9% of fluoride, heavy metals, chemicals, and bacteria, so you can love your tap water again. The Bio 1000 is the latest edition of the BMP 1000 model and the culmination of over 40 years of experience and research into water filtration by some of the world's leading scientists. Waters Co. was first to market with natural gravity-fed systems, creating alkaline water way back in 1984, and have continued to lead the market in research and development, setting the benchmark for all other brands to follow. Please go to my webpage, peteevans.com, to learn more and to receive your special discount from my link on the products page. You're going to love it. Mark, thank you so much for joining us. How are you, brother?
Overall, given where I'm living, pretty good.
And where are you living?
Los Angeles, California, the eye of the storm.
Why do you say that? Explain that to people that are listening or watching, why you're in the eye of the storm as you see it or as you feel it.
Well, I'll give you an example. Just yesterday, the governor of our state, the imperial wizard Gavin Newsom, just reissued under emergency order a statewide indoor mask mandate for all residents. The Babylon Bee put out a satirical comment about it a few hours later, showing a photograph of himself imposed over a graph that had a flat line moving across it from right to left with the statement, "Governor Gavin Newsom reimposes indoor mask mandates to keep the flat line flat."
We've got to love the Babylon Bee. they're so onto it, and they're so quick. And but interestingly, I think I read this morning that a school district or something happened today, like very recently, where they overthrew one of the mandates. I think it was that mandate or school mask wearing mandate. I'm not sure whether you've seen that today. But
yeah, you're probably up on the recent reports from Nicole Pearson is the lead attorney in the case, who's a friend of mine here in Los Angeles Unified School District, which is the second largest school district in the United States. It has over 600,000 children and has been coercing and prodding and poking and bribing and threatening all students age 12 and up to get the so-called vaccine or be banned from campus starting essentially the day after Christmas vacation, which is, I believe, January 2nd, January 3rd. The lawsuit countered that and argued reasonably that the children were at greater risk of getting shots than they were of actually catching this now 17th variant of the original Wuhan virus. And although the case is still in argument stage, the district actually backed down and announced just yesterday that they are going to defer implementation of the mandate until the fall semester, August, September, 2022. Now, they made it very clear that this was not done under duress and pressure from those nefarious anti-vaxxers. This was done simply to help restructure the online learning environment for those that decline the vaccination so that there'll be enough space for them, 20,000 to be precise, in the fall. I mean, really important. And what I've been saying to all my patients the last 6 months, because I'm a child psychiatrist, I treat children, is we don't need to win the war. We just need to win the battle. And the battle is buy yourself some time. If you buy yourself enough time and you avoid giving these awful injections to your children, eventually the whole house of cards will tumble and the system will collapse in on itself. And that seems to be what's happening now. It's happening in LAUSD. It's happening at the federal level with now four district courts and very likely soon the Supreme Court overriding and basically demolishing the Biden-Harris administration's private employer mandates where everyone with other 100 employees or so has to get vaccinated or fired. And now in other school districts in San Diego and Florida, there are also successful lawsuits that are overriding the vaccine mandates for children down to age 16, down to age 12, and pretty soon it'll be down to age 5. So what I'm seeing overall here is that because of pushback in the courts and also pushback by parents at the local level and school districts, we're seeing the overlords really starting to become fearful and they're backing away. And even though they're not publicly giving up or giving in, they really are actually abdicating their positions. They're retreating, essentially, a sort of a organized retreat, which is exactly what we need. Because if the deferrals for the mandate implementation just keep being extended indefinitely, then we don't really have to worry about these things anymore. And then over time, there'll be so much obvious mainstream evidence even that this is a complete debacle that it will become eventually formally ended and shelved. So I think now in particular, and this is a message I really want to give to people, and certainly in the United States, I can't really speak for Australia, which is basically a prison camp right now with concentration guards and police arresting people for escaping from the camps, looking in the boots of cars. But in the United States, at least, this is not the time to give in and say, oh, I just don't want to lose my school. I just don't want to lose my job. I hate it, but I'm just going to get that shot so that I can stay employed or stay educated. This is the absolute worst time to do that because the water is receding, the tide is turning. And I really am confident that come January, we're going to see all of these systems collapsing and people are going to have their freedom back, at least their bodily integrity freedom. At least we'll start from that, which is the most important. And then, you know, move up from there.
Mm, yeah, it is very promising and quite positive news. Which is quite rare over the last
just a little bit
year and a half, and it's interesting that you say that because so many people that they've asked me over the last year, especially the last year, about these vaccine mandates, and they know my stance, but they say, "What do you think? What do you think we should do?" I said, "I can't tell you what to do, but I think patience. If you can hold out for as long as possible." I think that is the best course of action at the moment. And I'd follow it up to saying, because more and more evidence is going to start to be released, more and more people will start to fight this in the courts around the world. And as we're even seeing here in Australia, whether they're successful or not, it just buys you time. And the more time, it goes back to all of those, James Bond films and those thriller films where you have the hero, so to speak, and it seems like they're cornered. And the villain always ends up not finishing them off when they could. They end up talking and taking their time and this. So that's when the hero of the story manages with that extra 5 seconds or 10 seconds or whatever it be to escape. And the tables are turned. So how has it been for you in the eye of the storm and in California, in Los Angeles, having that view where we know that, well, maybe I shouldn't assume, but tell me what tell me what the emotional flavor is in LA. Because last year I interviewed a fellow and he said he felt like a fish out of water being a Republican supporter in a very Democratic state.
Well, I've gone from private to public. I was quite private up until March, April of 2020. I have a private practice. I don't write. I don't submit my opinions with my name attached that has anything to do with public policy, politics, religion, any of these third rail issues. Partly because LA is a largely liberal city. And I say liberal meaning not leftist, but a very non-conservative group of people who are largely weak and naive and not malicious, but due to their weakness and naivete, support tacitly, implicitly or explicitly, truly malicious, destructive individuals and policies, which I define as the left, which are anti-religion, anti-family, anti-freedom, anti-real health. They often will push pseudo-health, but truly what they're pushing is poison psychologically and physically. And their entire goal and their purpose is really to destroy the foundations of the country. And I believe this is an international movement. George Soros is an excellent example of this. He has funded most of the district attorney campaigns throughout the United States, which have installed true leftists, and I mean sociopathic individuals like George Gascon, who is the new district attorney in Los Angeles, who beat a fairly liberal-leaning Democrat Black woman, who is a pretty darn good DA, actually, and has now let out child molesters, rapists, murderers, and cop killers by removing the penalties and enhancement for crimes committed in wait, committed with a weapon, committed in tandem with conspiracy charges, things that keep people away for more than 10 to 15 to 20 years. And they are now out on the streets wreaking havoc. There was a series of flash mobs that broke into stores in Beverly Hills in the last few days with sledgehammers, stealing millions of dollars in fine watches, jewelry, high-end handbags. The group was arrested. One of the groups was arrested. And the same day, the very same day, he released all of them back onto the street, every single one. This is truly madness. It is an attack on civilization. It's an attack on physical safety. It's an attack on psychological well-being. We are heading into a truly anarchistic and chaotic period of time in this country, in the United States. So anyone who stands up and speaks out against this is immediately labeled a racist, a misogynist, a homophobe, a Trump supporter, a white supremacist, a supporter of the patriarchy, you name it, whatever the ism is, you're it. So as you can understand, I would be very loath to speak out on any of these issues, given where I live. However, what I decided after having seen how bad things were becoming in spring of 2020 is that I can't sleep at night. I can't live a life of integrity without actually standing up and speaking what I believe is the truth. And that is the truth about the harm done to children initially by closing schools and masking them. And then later the harm done to all people with forced mass vaccination campaigns. So I began speaking and writing about this back in May of 2020. And eventually, I even wrote a book, which came out last month, which was just published 35 days ago, called The United States of Fear, How America Fell Victim to a Mass Delusional Psychosis. It's doing well. It's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, both hard physical copy, as well as Kindle. So even if you live in a landlocked prison camp, you can still order it and read it online. It is a summary, a cultural history of how we got here, how fear really impregnated the United States, and how it has been groomed for the last several decades by our government, media, and corporations to create a easily compliant and easily intimidated population to accept irrational and self-destructive mandates. This, I believe, did not begin in March, April of 2020. It began much, much earlier. And it began in urban areas primarily, led largely by secular, single, liberal-leaning, dependent individuals who do not have good, strong bonds with their family, with their spouses, with church, with civic organizations, and are very prone to feeling lost and isolated and alone and dependent on government. Matthias Desmet, a Belgian psychoanalyst and psychologist and professor, has really reached the same conclusions. And he has indicated, I think, very crisply and clearly that totalitarianism gives rise to an end of days scenario when three conditions are in place. And I believe those conditions have been in place in Western Europe for a long time, certainly in all Anglophone countries, which are the most totalitarian today, ironically, which is Great Britain, New Zealand, Australia, Canada, the United States. And those conditions are the following. One, a lack of meaning in one's life. That is largely true in most Western urban areas. Second, a disconnect from interpersonal relationships. And that goes very strongly with urban areas where most women are unmarried and not even dating and simply live and work from home, largely. And then finally, a free-floating, untethered anxiety, a kind of sense that something's off and wrong. And that's been put in place for decades by media and government and corporations saying that we should all be scared of, you name it, the end of the world in 12 years, AOC, Greta Thunberg, white nationalism, white racism, toxic masculinity, rape culture, God forbid, Donald Trump. I mean, he's the reason why the climate is warming up. That's what we keep being told. I didn't know he was so powerful. So when a virus comes along and we're all supposed to just cower in fear of our imminent demise, the people in the cities that fall under those three conditions immediately said, absolutely, I will do what you say. I am scared to death. And thank God, government, you gave me a solution, which is to stay at home, do Zoom calls, batten down the hatches, shut down the schools, and just wait until the government tells me it's safe to come out. And thank goodness that's going to happen when we get these wonderful life-saving vaccinations, because clearly there is absolutely no other way to treat this illness except with a shot or two. Or three, four, five, every 6 months. What the hell? We'll get a free shot card. We get nine shots. The 10th one, we get a 20% off on our local hot dog stand. That's where we're going. And people were primed to do that, particularly the non-conservative, unmarried, government dependent, lacking meaning in life, anxious, lonely women and men who live in large cities. So I feel that intensely when I leave my house every day. I feel like I'm back in residency where the door closes behind me and anyone without a badge is psychotic. But when I leave my home now, if I look around and I see somebody wearing a mask outdoors, I just say, okay, crazy. This is not going to be a regular rational exchange that we have. I have to assume this person is delusional and has lost his or her mental faculties. And largely speaking, I'm correct, certainly outside. And now, of course, we have another mask mandate indoors that's come. So now inside and outside, people are wearing masks everywhere. It is really sick. It is really unhealthy. It is intense. And it is far reaching. The psychology of fear is still, in my view and in my mind, what is driving this pandemic, meaning the pandemic of irrationality. And the mask is the visual reminder of that. The mask says, I am afraid, and you need to be too.
I agree 100%. I read a book many years ago by Michael Crichton. And interestingly enough, very similar title to your book. His was called State of Fear. And it was a novel based around, and if you haven't read it, it's about the fear of climate change and the agenda that was pushing climate change or global warming. It must have been 15, 20 years ago, I think that book was written. And it basically debunked climate change. But what it managed to do was show how the manipulation through the media, through the corporations, could create a state of fear, as you mentioned, the United States of Fear. And how does someone get out of or come through the spell that has been cast upon them? As you said, if you see somebody wearing a mask outside, you think they're crazy. Can that person come back? Can they work through this? Is this part of their initiation? Tell me about what you see. Is there hope here for the masses, so to speak?
I believe that there is. However, I think it's important to think about this not as an individual fear illness, but rather as a social contagion, a traumatization of a population. I work with individuals who are traumatized. Trauma is basically an extension of a acute period of time during which you were afraid and you've lost control, and it recurs again and again in the present moment. So the past keeps reliving itself. We were in a fearful state for a first few weeks. I don't think with good reason, but I certainly am understanding and sympathetic of the fact that many people who are not as resilient as I am and perhaps not as prone to fear as I am became scared for 10, 12, 15, 20 days. I get that. But we're living in that now, 2 years later. We are still on, what are we on, month 20 of 15 days to flatten the curve. I mean, this flattening of the curve is like Groundhog Day. The only way to break out of that, from my point of view, from a clinical psychiatrist's point of view, is psychological treatment. The medical issue is over. We won that war a long time ago. The only people that did die after the first few weeks and have been dying are those who aren't receiving treatment. And we've known that treatment is critical, necessary, effective, cheap, available from the very beginning. But we're denying treatment to people still, internationally denying people. This is not an American issue. This is an international problem, purely to foster the end game of mass vaccination. There is no other explanation for this. And Dr. Peter McCullough described this beautifully on the recent Joe Rogan podcast that came out a few days ago. This has been planned. It has been organized. It's not a conspiracy theory. There's written, documented evidence of it from many, many sources going back way before January of 2020. So how do you stop it from a psychological point of view? I think you need to treat the illness that's underlying it, which is the fear. And the only way to really treat fear is to offer somebody either individually therapy or as a group, a sense of safety. And I mean real safety. I don't mean the fake safety that we've been peddling, worshiping at the altar of safety, safety uber alles, which is a lie and a distraction. I don't know, however, if it's going to be easy to accomplish because of the number of people that are still affected by this and because the mechanism to perpetuate it is still ongoing, i.e. mask mandates indoors by Gavin Newsom, booster shots, new variants. Will there be a certain number of people who will eventually just wake up because they realize it's all BS? Yes, of course. However, what I think, and this is a bit of a dark comment, but I place truth above feel good as much as I can. I fear that for many people, it's going to take a frying pan to the face before they actually lose the fear of the virus and begin fearing what they should be fearing, which is government control and the loss of their liberties. And what I mean by that is it may start to take the loss of children, the loss of their lives. Mothers may have to start burying their five-year-olds before they wake up and realize that they've been had, that they have been used as vehicles to abuse their children in order to assert and concentrate greater power in government, media, and corporations. And I believe in the long run that this is actually a better way to get out of this than a long, prolonged, slow, almost endless wholesale population death. We are going to have to suffer losses. And the people that are not awake right now are going to be the ones that need to suffer them before they wake up and before the country wakes up. And of course, other countries around the world. I think it's going to get darker briefly before it gets better. And I think people need to be prepared for that.
I've come to the same conclusion over the last year, is that with the work that we've done with hundreds of thousands of people through our online dietary principles subscription program. One of the determining factors for people that wanted to change their diet after they had countless number of surgeries and visit all the experts that they could, that the last bastion of hope was, okay, maybe I'll take a couple of things out of my diet. You know, that was considered extreme for these people that had gone under the knife. But what I came to realize, and this was over the last decade prior to COVID coming along, was that a lot of people needed to hit rock bottom. They need to be in so much pain and suffering that that was the catalyst for change. And such a simple change it is to take a couple of food groups out of their diet for a period of time and see how they feel. And one of the things that has also come into my awareness over the last decade is that we've done a lot of work with parents with children that have become autistic. And many of these parents would say it was after one of their vaccine shots. So a lot of these parents were pro-vaccine back in the day. They saw the damage that their child suffered. And these people now are some of the biggest proponents out there to say, hey, there's an issue here. We want to save other mums and dads and children from going through what we went through, because we were pro-science. We were pro-vaccine. It's interesting. The loudest anti-vaxxers seem to be the ones that were very pro-vaccine. And when I heard at the start of this pandemic that all the talking heads were the only way out of this is through a vaccine, and Bill Gates was spearheading this, I kept going back to these parents that were pro-science and pro-vaccine, that now were the lions out on the field roaring the loudest, saying, no, don't go down the same path as us. And what I see is going to happen is the same thing, is the ones that have trusted this, the ones that may be asleep, as you said, they're the ones that are going to roar the loudest when they realize that they've been duped. And unfortunately, I have come to the same conclusion, and it's a shitty conclusion. It's a real shitty one, because my whole endeavor is prevention is the best form of cure. Don't wait till you get to that rock bottom stage before you need to change. And over the last decade, I'll finish with this. This is the number one question I've asked to 300, 400, 500 doctors that I've interviewed. How do we get people to change such a simple thing as what they eat, or to generate a notion of self-love and self-nourishment? And pretty much everybody that I've said is that I've asked that question is, I wish we knew the answer. Do you have an answer?
I have seen some people wake up before being injured. But I think that those people that wake up tend to have an implicit curiosity that propels them forward. So when people ask me, how do you change minds? I have a friend, I have a family member, I have a lover who is not on the same page as me, and I keep providing data and data and data, it just doesn't do any good. I ask the following question. I say, is that person curious? If the answer is no, stop wasting your time. In motivational interviewing, when I was a physician in training, we were told to ask all of the patients that we saw for the initial evaluation for care, whether they smoked or used other drugs. And if the answer was yes, of course, we would try to convince them to stop smoking, because we all know that smoking nicotine, tobacco specifically, causes cancer and early premature death. But what we were told, and this was very smart, this was 15, 20 years ago, was don't tell them to stop smoking. Don't provide them with data if they say that they're a smoker. Ask them one simple question. Is there anything that bothers you about smoking? And if the person says, hell no, smoking is great. It wakes me up in the morning. It's a relaxation after sex. I feel calm. It gives me something to do with my fingers and my hands. It's like the best thing I've ever had. just shut up. Don't say, well, you know, it's going to kill you. Don't bother. You just say, oh, okay, I understand. Make a note in the chart, bring it up at the next visit. Eventually, those people are going to say, in answer to your question, is there anything you don't like about smoking? Well, I'm not so sure about that, but you know, I used to play soccer all the time, and now I'm clutching my chest as soon as I start to run on the field, and I really love soccer, and I can't even play anymore.
I really hope you enjoyed the first half of this podcast. If you'd like to listen to the rest, please visit evolvenetwork.tv. That's evolvenetwork.tv. We'll see you there.
The information, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast should not be treated as a substitute for nutritional, medical, or other advice by a qualified professional. Guests in this podcast express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. Nothing in this podcast should be used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical condition. Neither Pete Evans nor any sponsor endorse any views, opinions, or conclusions expressed or shared in this podcast.